Hello, Ivy here. This week's podcast is entitled Cocoon, The Return to Windsor, Episode 70. And to give you some context for this podcast and the title, it is based on a film, two films in fact. One, the first one was Cocoon, and the follow-up was, as you can see, Cocoon, The Return. The films were made in the 80s, and there are elements of that which you will see why I've chosen that title, partly in humour, but the linkages with the seven working royals. So here is a short extract from Wikipedia, because it gives all the information that's relevant in terms of this podcast. There is more detail in the article, as per usual, in terms of my reference sources for this week's publication. Right, here we go. About 10,000 years ago, peaceful aliens from the planet Antaria set up an outpost on Earth, on Atlantis. When Atlantis sank, 20 aliens were left behind, kept alive in large rock-like cocoons at the bottom of the ocean. Now, a group of Antarians have returned to collect them. Disguising themselves as humans, they rent a house with a swimming pool and charge the water with life force to give the cocooned Antarians energy to survive their trip home. They charter a boat from a local captain named Jack, who helps them retrieve the cocoons. After the aliens reveal themselves to him and explain what's going on, he decides to help them. Next door to the house the Antarians are renting is a retirement home. Three of its residents, Ben, Arthur and Joe, often trespass to swim in the pool next door. They absorb some of the recently charged life force, making them feel younger and stronger. Eventually, caught in the act, they are given permission to use the pool by the Antarian leader, Walter, on the condition that they do not touch the cocoons or tell anybody else about it. Rejuvenated with youthful energy, the three men begin to let the advantage of the pool take hold, as they are relieved of all their ailments. The other retirement home residents become suspicious after witnessing Ben's wife, Mary, climb a tree. Their friend Bernie reveals the secret of the pool to the other residents, who rush to the pool to swim in its waters. The Antarians offer to take residents of the retirement home with them to Antaria, where they will never grow older and never die. Most of them accept the offer. So unless the royal family have found a fountain to use, or have discovered any pools with life force energy placed there by aliens, then we have had trouble brewing for about 40 years. Despite the obvious to people with common sense, one of the favourite pastimes of the British royal family is to gather charities to add to the roster of charitable organisations that the royal family supports on paper year on year. No rhyme or reason to most of them, and zero thought about the practicalities of a small group of people being able to adequately support every one of them listed between the working royals. And this is before the number was reduced to seven. There is still this common belief that if an organisation is known to be associated with royalty, particularly those with the word royal in their title, then money will flow into their bank accounts naturally due to the prestige of being associated with the British royal family. Research has proven, and receipts exist, that disproves that belief well and truly trounces that out of the water of fantasy tales. It is physically impossible to visit and interact with these four-figure totals of organisations, no matter what age the working royals are. But as of the latest permutation of the seven working senior royals, there is no chance at all of every one of those organisations receiving contact from a senior royal, let alone an actual visit. An actual visit does not constitute getting to know about the organisation and working with them in some shape or form to raise their profile and to develop self-sustaining projects with the management team who work in these organisations. Visiting, smiling and cutting a ribbon or two does nothing but take up staff resources, which could be better spent on meaningful activity. Yes, it may generate a news headline or two by the tabloids as part of their invisible contract with the royal family, but it is far away from providing tangible assistance, as it is a work engagement. I'll provide one of the links from a research organisation who gather data on customer or potential customer donations' behalf. The information that they like to provide, and that is their purpose, is about the difference having a member of the royal family as a patron of an organisation and looking at the difference in outcomes before and since the patron has been listed. In fact, it's an organisation that looks at a variety of charities and how the money is gathered that they receive and how it is spent, not just to do with royals. Royals just happens to be one of the reports that they've done. Makes for interesting reading. From memory, less than a quarter receive a visit, and the visits generally take up 2% of each senior royal's time per annum. It does beg the question, what other activity is being done by the royal family for the remaining 98% of their time each year? The 2% of their time is not even quantified in measurable value-added terminology. It is all smoke and mirrors. And the most polite thing I can say about it all, it is very much in the style of creative accounting. The British public deserve better. Next section, royal supporters profile. Support for the British monarchy, data gathered this year, 2022, by age group. Again, all of the age groups are listed in the reference sources. I am just merely going to quote a few lines from it. Although the British monarchy is supported by a plurality of people across most age groups in Great Britain, it is among over 65-year-olds where the level of support is highest at 77%. Younger age groups are progressively more likely to oppose the monarchy, with 31% of 18 to 24-year-olds opting instead for an elected head of state. Houston, we have a problem. If 77% of the royal support base is aged 65 or over, then in the space of four decades, that total will have shrunk considerably. And with less royal supporters decreasing with the younger age groups, there are insufficient people interested enough to match the numbers who will no longer be here as part of the stats that they like to quote. Any successful business, and the royals need to decide whether or not they are a family, which funds itself, or it is a business entity largely supported by UK taxpayers. the grant loved by tabloids, in which they love to quote, is the sovereign grant, as being the only one where the public fund the royals. But as none of the royals work, and anything they spend is public money, not their own stored away for other purposes, probably outside of the UK, then I would respectfully suggest that most of the money in the various funds has come from the public purse in some shape or form. A few lines from a previous podcast on workforce planning and what it is. I refer to workforce in its most simplest and basic of forms, because I am almost certain that the British royal family do not know what a workforce plan is, and if they do, they would not use one. At best, they would have documentation somewhere with the appropriate headings, but pay no attention to it. So for the purpose of the podcast, and to find a way to give comments about the age profile, among many other things, of the promoted Magnificent Seven by UK media, in various permutations, as being the group to fill the role of Prince Harry, who stepped back from senior royal duties and removed his family and himself to a safer environment, and one which would be better for their mental health. Apparently, stepping back from taxpayer-funded duties has put the monarchy at risk. Really? One person leaving an establishment means the business is going to fold? What were the rest of the senior royals doing all these years, and at taxpayers' expense? In their eagerness to appear as if nothing to see here, folks, and all is well, UK media have been going on ever since how they as a group, and at times the two least impactful duo within that group, are declared as saviours of the monarchy, or in some reports, the secret weapons. Let's have a simple meander through workforce planning and succession planning as part of the process. The royal family are a family, but they are also referred to as the firm. This name dates back to the time of King George VI, Queen Elizabeth's father. The firm is an informal title for the British royal family and its associated institutions, including the courtiers, staff and working royals, that keep the business of the monarchy functioning. It is said that King George made a statement that he and the rest of the royals were not a family, were a firm. The offices contain many departments, including those who manage finances and human resources. I will come on to the function of human resources imminently. This span of departments is officially called the Royal Household and is comprised of hundreds of workers. In the Oprah interview in March 2020, the distinction was made by the Sussexes between the family and the firm. It was clear that most of the issues originated from the firm, and I am guessing, therefore, that the couple made efforts to distinguish between family and the firm when they interacted with certain people. It was clear that the interaction between the Sussexes and the Queen and Prince Philip was that of a grandson and his wife and his grandparents. Even now, when Harry refers to interactions across the pond, he refers to his grandmother, not the Queen. With that in mind, I have approached this podcast on the responsibility of the firm to advise its management of the plans that need to be in place moving forward, just like any good business would do, i.e. have a strategic plan in place, with policies that deliver that plan and identify the stakeholders that need to be consulted or liaised with in terms of what they would like to see, and if possible, and then for the firm to work with professionals and specialists to have a rolling development plan towards those goals identified. Regular reviews in place so that the strategic plan and its objectives can be updated when needed in terms of delivery, which should lead to the desired results. I am 100% certain that there is no workforce plan in the firm, and I am equally certain that within the hundreds of employees, I can guess which levels the people of colour are generally employed in, and I can guess where women are employed, and within that group, I can guess the scales of salary paid. And there is no way that women of colour occupy substantial numbers of senior posts of all females employed. And equally, there will be very few women at the top of the organisational structure. The human resources personnel should be the lead on any workforce planning process and an accompanying workforce development plan. Knowing now that it was the HR department in regular contact with the same role reporters, one in particular on film on two occasions, confirming discussions about Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex's state of health. And the suicidal ideations, which is a serious breach of confidentiality and is a data protection breach legally. So I am not holding my breath to expect understanding of workforce planning, because if such a plan exists, we would not be in the situation we are in now regarding the age group of the so-called working royals. That being said, let me go through the motions of what should have been done and what should have been predicted and planned for, and in so doing, avoid the current state of affairs. The less sprightly and the unables left to fly the flag of the firm, which currently mirrors the state of the UK at the moment, a once bright and admirable member of the fleet, now fallen in grace and reduced to an unsteady vessel, with increasing holes appearing in its lowest deck, and an engine that is slowly grinding to a halt. All it has are a few oars and a few lifeboats, all of which have seen better days, and is unlikely to be able to travel to safer seas without assistance. It would require outside assistance to carry it forward. Why would the public pay even more to keep a group of unelected people in place when we have an elected forum for taking the country forward? It is called the government. They need to do their job or be voted out. There is no luxury of time to pay people who lack competence or foresight to be a family using public funds to masquerade as a business. A business which also contains people who are not up to date with the requirements of a business and certainly should be under scrutiny for the public funds it receives to underperform anyway. Time for a change. Let me show you the basics, and I mean the basics of a standard workforce plan and the strategy plans that come from that process. In order to ensure understanding and competence, all of those employed would need a development plan and a range of development targets needed in each post to ensure compliance with the law. Failing that, vote for the elected members who you believe can do the job, and if they are unable, vote them out. Simple. Workforce planning toolkits and models. Workforce planning and development is basically understanding the workforce you have and the service delivery pressures the organisation, or in this case the firm, has. Over the last 20 plus years, much more is known about what needs to be done and how to go about it. There are a multitude of documents available now, and many toolkits and templates to help organisations set about finding out what is likely to come their way in the future, and to ensure that their organisation is not caught off guard and is able to prepare for such changes. 95% of the models and toolkit out there will not apply in their entirety for the British Royal Family, and in my opinion the firm will not understand 94% of it anyway and would have next to no interest. I also suspect that because the Royal Family appear not to like change and also to choose topics that they have personal interest in to be included in the causes that they support, in inverted commas, and suspect that they would not like to be told by any of their staff of a few possible ways to go about things in the future, and how they can be measured, and how to ensure that the new way of doing some things would be based on changing needs of the country, not just carry on doing what they have always done. I will list some of the many resources out there together with case studies so that you can get a better understanding of what it entails and the detail you can choose to go into in order to benefit large or small organisations. There are hundreds of graphics used to explain the process, and I will include some in the podcast presentation along with additional ones in the accompanying article. The best place to start is to look at who delivers the service to the clients and customers, and then to explore the needs of both and their current capacity to carry out those duties now and in the future. Knowledge of the existing workforce. One of the first areas to examine is to look at workforce supply, including the age profile and the likely dates in the future where they will be less visible or unable to carry out the volume of tasks required in quite the same way. In the case of the firm, it would and should include the household staff, all of them. No one should feel that they have a job for life. One of the things that I object to hearing from royal pundits is that the Queen declared right from the start that she was going to be Queen for life. And the royalists were such happy souls and described it as dedication to the role. I would argue that it is selfishness to put oneself first in such a position rather than what is best for the country. It is a lovely soundbite phrase to put in all the media at the time, and to continue to keep repeating it every decade. The new king is now in post, and both King Charles and the next in line, Prince William, are far from popular, and one could argue that Prince William has not been prepared in any way in terms of skills and experience other than being told and treated like he's made of glass, that he is special and that he will be king one day. The first in line, who is now king, was told the same things and spent, it seems, vast amounts of time with people other than his parents as he was growing up, including a six-month stint when his parents were required to be on a royal tour. It seems a variety of staff were responsible for so much of his upbringing, together with certain relatives, one of whom King Charles was very close to, was Lord Mountbatten. There are and were a whole host of activities that would suggest that may not have been the best person for a young man, let alone a future king, to be fraternising with. In reality, Charles and William and George, if there is still a monarchy, were and will be prepared for kingship from day one. They are raised to feel entitled and privileged from the beginning, and told that they are better than their siblings, and are being prepared to be king. The spares are there to provide support to the older sibling, and there is no concept of a spare ever leaving the fold. The spares are targeted for distraction stories because the heirs and their spouses must never be seen in a bad light. And also, where there is discord within the great British public, it appears that these cosseted individuals are not informed of such things, and if anything is seen in the media that is not favourable, evidence is removed within hours. One has to question what kind of state is the UK these days. Our leaders like to criticise other nations for doing similar, albeit in a much more prevalent way. Nevertheless, the UK does it too, but it is just not talked about. To his credit, King Charles knew he would have a long wait before becoming king, so he involved himself in charities and causes, some of which, like the Prince's Trust, remain very successful to this day. The second in line, who is now first in line, appears to just enjoy life, because the job would be his one day anyway, and there are people on hand to do bits and pieces now, and no doubt there will be staff to do things when he becomes king. That is my assumption. I have no evidence of that. It's just my observations. The evidence is there that there is not yet one completed project set up by any of the Cambridges, not one. It was all fun and giggles when the Duke of Sussex was part of the trio, and they came under the banner of the Royal Foundation. Since the split, the completed projects have moved with the Sussexes, and all of have measurable outcomes matching their objectives. Even Meghan, with her limited time behind the gilded gates of the royal properties, delivered on every single one of her projects, two of them within her first year, and they are all continuing to deliver today. Learn about your customer. Who constitutes the royal family's target audience for its day-to-day activities and external engagements? What do those people want to see? Write a positioning statement. Make it clear what the royal family is and what it is not. Pitch your positioning to stakeholders. Inform the public what the royal family will be doing and identify those members who will be at the forefront of this activity, i.e. the seven senior royals, including the first in line of succession after King Charles passes. Plan your go-to-market strategy. Discuss and document how the royal family is going to market itself to the public. Cannot rely on everyone knowing the royal family. They may well do, but not all are interested, and even those that are interested will not continue to blindly follow and accept what the firm is describing as service. It has to be based on needs of the recipients of that service, individual and national, alongside the reality of those who are deemed to be in that total responsible for the delivery of it, i.e. the senior royals. Set a goal for the launch. Set a launch date when the working royals will be identified and it will be known who is responsible for what topics from the strategic plan. And where there are crossovers, explain how the data will be gathered and recorded and explained and measured accordingly. Create promotional content. Have a team working on the promotional content each year for the royal family as to what they hope to cover in the coming year and where it links to the strategy and so to the accounts. Prepare your team. The identified senior royals who will be the face of the monarchy moving forward need to meet and liaise as a business group, not to meet as a family. Talking business. and be informed what is expected in order for them to feedback about their roles within that strategy and what will work and what will not before publicly launching something that cannot be delivered, despite it stating the opposite on the Royal website. Launch the product. Have a launch date when all the above has been done and is documented and everyone knows of their role within it. Don't launch something and then spend a year or two or even longer deciding on how it is going to fit in with the normal life that has been enjoyed up to this point, where now the demands on each person's time has changed and will continue to change over the coming years. See how well you did achieving your goals. Having decided early on in these stages, decide on what and how things will be measured in order that everyone can see, including the public, the resources that were allocated to each activity and visit, etc. What was the final outcome achieved? If not, has an evaluation and review been carried out in order to feed into the next year's processes and systems, etc. In the article, there is a much more detailed section using all of those headings I've just gone through for the Royal Family, but in terms of real businesses out there and what they do and why they do it and what they're looking for and how they measure. Very interesting. Just that section alone, I think, is quite useful for any business, large, small or medium. But I just went through the rules because that's what this podcast is about. But if you're reading the article, as I said, there's quite a lengthy section using the same headings, learn about your customer, etc., and details around it. And also in the reference sources at the end of the article, the publication where that came from is listed with their website, and you will see that and much, much more, which could be of use to you in the future in terms of business and documentation and workforce planning. Simply put, workforce planning is about forecasting your current and future staffing needs. First, you work out your strategic business objectives, then address the supply of labour. For example, are there candidates with the skills you require available? The final step is to get the right balance between labour demand and supply so that you have the right number of employees with the right skills at the right time. Labour demand forecasting is crucial, as businesses don't want a surplus of employees who are not fully and effectively deployed, nor do they want gaps in their employee pool resulting in reduced productivity, performance and profitability. When business owners are considering labour demand forecasting, their first questions are likely to be, where are we going as a business? What is our intended growth in the next 3 to 5 years or longer? Will we be developing or expanding our services or product range? What technological advancements may affect what we do? And will this affect our need for differing staffing levels? What are absenteeism and turnover rates like? Do we have sufficient management support to progress our objectives? And will they be behind the plans? Any changes to the human resources needs within the business should be led by the strategic business plan and the goals for the business, not the other way around. Labour supply analysis. Once a business has forecast what its future requirements are likely to be, it is then necessary to determine what number of employees will be needed, what skills, and when. Labour supply may come from within the organisation or outside. The first step, therefore, is to do an analysis of the skills currently within the business. In conclusion, workforce planning is imperative to businesses wanting to plan their growth and limit situations where they are faced with too many or too few employees or the wrong skill sets. In addition, workforce planning can help business owners see how their employees, by forecasting staff with specific skills, can help them achieve their strategic business objectives. My conclusions regarding the 7 senior roles, or whatever total it ends up being. I heard recently that the figure might be 11 working roles. My thoughts in bullet points are as follows. Pulling people together initially by order of succession to the throne, then random people who are much further down in the line of succession have been added because there are insufficient numbers within the British royal family who are senior royals. No other senior royal, including the monarch, ever believed that Prince Harry would leave with his family. The hope was, and it has been stated publicly by more than one royal reporter, that it was hoped that Meghan would reach breaking point and she would leave. Clearly, the spare is meant to take the abuse himself, like all the spares of the history of the royal family, and be the whipping boy and the workhorse for all the rest, and not to be credited for their efforts. Cruelty and arrogance combined led to the January 2020 statement, where Prince Harry stated he and Meghan were stepping back from senior royal duties. This after months of conversations with the firm and nothing ever being agreed, and still no doubt believing they would be able to hang on to Harry, regardless of what else happened with his family. March 2020, the Sussexes left the UK. March 2021, the 12-month review that only the royal family had any belief that Harry would return, ended. It was their supposed olive branch for the Sussexes to return. In reality, they only wanted Harry to return, and there was no way he would bring his family back into that abusive environment and subject his children to be the whipping boy or girl for any of the other senior royals' children. April 2021 to date. A whole industry of targeted and incitement of hate against the Sussexes, particularly Meghan, has grown on the foundation of hate-filled articles and interviews on UK media and in printed form from 2016, with Australia a close second. Now it is clear that there are substantial resources behind it all, and that there are people paid to post negative things on social media platforms, literally every few minutes. The social media platforms themselves also benefit hugely from the hate-filled engagements, therefore the incentive is not high to stop this practice, as shareholders benefit too. It requires legal input now. It can't be left to social media platform owners. Definitely not. It needs the law. And if they don't do what they're required to do to reduce this, then they will be breaking the law and action can be taken. September 2022, the Queen passes. October 2022, King Charles declares that he is slimming down the monarchy. A whole 2 years after the Sussexes left the UK. People lined up and all is meant to be right with the world. It is no better than picking 7 randoms off the street. The whole spectacle was lacklustre and did the complete opposite of depicting a dynamic and eager and competent group moving forward. The only people that matter to the firm are now the King and the next in line of succession. All the rest are window dressing, masquerading as working royals. The actual level of expenditure will not fall, because the cost from the public purse encompasses all the royals we the taxpayers pay for, whether they are working or not. Moving pieces around as if they are on a Crown Monopoly board list of properties does not reduce the bill unless they are moving to smaller accommodation, which rarely happens. By bringing some of the family who stayed in the background most of the time out of the cobwebs and send them here and there now and then will add more expenses to the public purse. The two that do next to nothing anyway will continue on the same path. After 20 years of operating that way, very little will change, and if anything, even less will be said about it, because one of the two is now next in line of succession. It is a known fact that lies will be told to protect the next in line, and the same goes without saying for the monarch. What will output, what little output was produced before, will certainly be reduced in the future. Following on from the output's results since March 2020, following the exit of the Sussexes. Over 70% of the seven are of pensionable age or very near. That is not workforce planning. That is not succession planning. Those seven will not be able to or want to cover all those charities listed as being royal patronages. 1,000 plus years of practice and history, and all the senior royals and the freeloaders on the taxpayers' payroll have not got a clue. They plan to do nothing differently, just that seven of them will have more photo opportunities than previously. Slim down monarchy does not mean it is cheaper. The British royal family seem as if it's going to continue as it has always done, i.e. doing what they want to do and when they want to do it. Just a few soundbite phrases will be used to indicate that they are being thrifty somehow. The official photo of the King and his consort and the next in line and his consort gave anything but hope for the future. The current king has not started off well, and the absolute power has gone to his head. He will not be UK monarch for long. He is obviously far from healthy, and has been that way for several years already. The next in line and his partner are just waiting for another title and the power that comes with it. There will be no extra work from them, and they already had low figures for engagements for years, and one visit to one place can and was often recorded as more than one work engagement, to make those figures look slightly better. The British royal family had 40 years to start wondering how they would manage in the future. Instead, William was allowed a half-in and half-out arrangement when he and Catherine got married. Second in line to the throne, and he was allowed to do that for almost 20 years. Both come across as the most insincere people when they speak, and they always look bored or manic on their visits. I have zero faith in either the current or the future monarch, and I know I am not alone. Note how Harry, who was further down in the line of succession, was refused a half-in and half-out arrangement out of pure vindictiveness. But the royal family played themselves and lost because it was the best thing for the Sussexes, but definitely not for the royal family. Sussexes now have no ties with that institution. Freedom. Not even the royal reporters write about the royal family every day because they earn less from them. Such is the lack of interest from the public in the UK, even from their 77% supporters who are over the age of 65, and even less outside of the UK in terms of interest, lack of interest, I should say. They are more interested in negativity towards the Sussexes, particularly Meghan, no doubt following the royal family itself and its media, who write on average 5 articles each an hour on the Sussexes every day. One reporter, who every article of his since 2016 has been vile towards Meghan, admitted in writing recently in his rag that the Sussexes has been golden for them because of the money they earn from writing hateful things about them. What the British royal family should be concerned about, that despite having its own propaganda team, the propaganda team earn more by writing about a couple who are not working royals and who no longer live in the UK. And the UK tabloids have no access to them for any story. Tells you all you need to know about the content. And writing lies or truth about the actual royal family does not interest the public. Where there is news to be reported on some very shady activities, the tabloids, via their invisible contract, won't touch those stories. They much prefer to harass people and destroy them in any way possible, including death, because it all pays the bills. That is the type of media the UK has now, and works hand in glove with the UK monarchy. A government in complete disarray, and also has form for shady activities over the years. Yes, Britain is far from great, and the way it is going, it won't even be the UK for very long. Let the people of the UK freeze and use candles to get by and watch raw sewage flow freely into the waterways. Increasing numbers of people homeless and sleeping on benches in seaside towns in particular, including pensioners. The UK has the highest number of food banks of any developed country. But all of the high-profile media networks, printed and televised, wake up each morning and only have a problem with a biracial woman who valued herself and walked away from what many in the UK covet, i.e. a life in the royal family. Well, like so many walks of life in the UK, certain spaces are not welcome to people of colour, unless you remain silent and accept all that is thrown at you, and smile sweetly, and be so grateful to be allowed to occupy that space. If you are really good, you receive an honour, which has invisible puppet strings to guide you in certain directions in the future when needed. But the next day, they won't shake your hand or stand too close to you. Yeah, the UK is on life support. Thank goodness that Sussexes and their children are free from that toxic life. All the haters have similar characteristics and lifestyles, and eventually their health will be affected by all the hate inside of them. No one's health improves when you spend every waking moment hating someone and dreaming up targeted hate income-generating activity to keep going. When that fails one day, the fall will be quick and health will nosedive. Sussex Squad don't have those kind of issues. We are fine. Love and positivity never puts you in a hospital bed, but hatred will do just that one day. Peace and love. That's it for another week. So, as usual, speak to you all in the comments, and the article will be out tomorrow, Monday, late afternoon, as usual. Speak to you all soon. Bye from me. Bye from Ivy. Bye.